Chodesh Tov for tomorrow. Okay, then. So we are now on Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph, and we're up to my timer. And we said that the Nachri in certain cases will not be able to be mevatel his reshus in order to allow the Jew to carry from his house into the chatzir, because the Nachri is a partner in this chatzir. Ad sheyaskir, unless the guy will agree to sign some sort of a contractual agreement in which he rents his rights out to the chatzir, to the Jew. And this would discourage a Jew from living in a common chatzir with a non-Jew, because Oved Kochavim lo meger, because generally speaking, the guy is not going to agree to enter into this contractual rental agreement to rent out his rights to use the chatzer. And now we're up to my timer. So if you're counting, it's more or less in the middle of the Amud, counting down, for example, from the top about 15, 20 lines, you'll see Memtes, my timer, is the beginning of the line. And the Gemara is trying to understand the nature of this enactment of the Chachamim, which is predicated on a psychological premise that the guy will certainly be inhibited to sign this contract. Why? Why wouldn't he sign this contract? After all, he's going to be getting in rental fees, and it's always a good idea to collect rental. Elam, if you're going to say Mishum Disavar, Dilma Osi Lach Zuke Birshuso. So again, don't be fooled by the word Elema, which always introduces a hava meaning that's going to be rejected, because if you take that into your brain, you're not going to be able to give your full attention to the Gemara, because the Gemara is going to spend a lot of time on this Elema. So let's bracket the word Elema, and let's make believe that the Gemara is giving the following presentation as a final answer. And that is Dilma Osi Lach Zuke Birshuso. Now what this means is that signing a rental agreement in which the renter is the guy and the tenant, so to speak, is the Yisrael, presents a potentially very difficult challenge to the renter, meaning to the guy. Which means the following, that lachzuke, so we're going to underline that word lachzuke. Lachzuke is the conjugated verb of the word chazaka. And what that means is that under certain circumstances, once you start using and benefiting from a piece of property, in this case a chatzer, then through that ishtamshus, by using that chatzer, and no one could object because you have a contract, in this case, the Jew is going to use the chatzer. Imagine he's going to bring in all his animals into this courtyard and feed them. Then what's going to happen is that later on, when the guy wants to exercise his rights and the rental agreement terminates, he's going to have a bit of a headache in any court. And it matters not whether we're talking about a Jewish court of law or even a non-Jewish court of law. In all cases, the non-Jew is going to have an uphill battle legally to get back rights to his courtyard, because the courtyard has now been rented out, and it seems, and there are witnesses to testify to the effect that the Jew is made a chazaka. I mean, he's been using this chatzer on a regular basis. He brings his animals out into the chatzer. So the Gemara says, Inicha, that would be an excellent approach. Lemandi Omar, according to one opinion, the machlokes, which we're about to learn in a minute, but one opinion in that machlokes, Sheschirus Bria Be'inon. Now, we're going to translate the word Bria literally, and then figuratively, to convey its real true meaning in this context. Literally, Bria means a healthy, solid, contractual agreement. And The question here is whether or not removing the guy from this chatzer, so to speak, don't take me literally, what I mean to say is removing his rights to the chatzer requires a legally binding contract. And one mandibar holds schirus bria be'inon. In order to remove the rights of the guy to this chatzer, so that now the Jew can carry from his bias into the chatzer on Shabbos, we need a fully binding, absolutely legal, a legally recognized schirus, a full-fledged rental agreement, which means that after the guy agrees to sign this agreement with me, I can now use the chatzer in any way I wish, and that's a contract that is upheld in any court, Jewish or non-Jewish courts. It's a legally binding contract. That's called schirus bria. Again, bria means literally healthy, but it means it's a full-fledged agreement. El amanti omer schirus ru'ua be'inon ma'ikol emeimar. Ru'ua means a shaky kind of thin as a thread contractual agreement. I would almost call it a fig leaf agreement. You know, there's certain kinds of legal agreements that are not really binding. You can't sink your teeth into them. There is some sort of a contract, like a facade kind of contract, but it's not the real monetary law. And, you know, maybe I could use a borrowed term, heker. Remember we spoke way back when about a lechi and a korah. You know, sometimes we need a heker, you know, something that looks like. It's not the real thing, but it looks like. That's called schirus ru'ua in this context. The Gemara now is about to embark upon this major machlokes as to how we can remove the guy from the chutz in such a way that the Yisrael can now carry from his house into the chutz on Shabbos, and to what extent do we require a schirus, a legal contract between the guy who is the maskir and the Jew who is the socher. The Itmar, we learned, Rav Chisda Omar, schiris bria, that in order to remove the nochri and his rights to this chatzer, so that the Jew now has exclusive rights to the chatzer, we need a schiris bria. And Rav Sheshis Omar Schirus Ru'ua. Just some sort of, as we said, fly-by-night, shaky, kind of cover-up contractual agreement. My Ru'ua Umay Bria. What would you say is a legal, halachically legal description of Bria, to explain Rav Chisda? And what does Rav Sheshis have in mind when he says that all you need is a schirus ru'ua? And once again, the Gemara is going to go through two possibilities. And in this case, you know, I would emphasize the word ilema, because the first possibility is going to be rejected outright. Our original understanding that the machlokes about what kind of schirus you need, whether it's bria or ru'ua sufficient, and that's going to impact on whether the guy is inhibited to sign such an agreement, because he may end up messing himself up by signing such an agreement. If the Jew, through this schirus contract, gets full rights to use the chatzer, the Jew might establish a chazaka, in which case it's going to be yoro ala tachtona. The guy is going to have a rough time when he sues the Jew in court to try to prove that the Jew doesn't own exclusive rights in the chatzer, because the Jew has a chazaka, like, you know, where you been, my friend John Paul Jones? I mean, I've been using the chatzer as my chatzer for who knows how long, right? So that's an ilema. That's a very intriguing and solid ilema. This ilema that we're about to learn now, to explain what the difference between bria and ru'u is, this is going to be rejected outright. And the Gemara says the following. Ilema, if we're going to assume that bria means bepruta, Re'ua means bepachos mishava pruta. So let's explain. In Jewish monetary law, if I enter into some sort of monetary agreement with you, and the agreement is clinched by kesef, the transfer of money does not require the full price. So I can buy a piece of karka which is worth $1 million and put down a down payment. I could be kona with that down payment, and my full acquisition rights will be materialized and halachically binding, even though I didn't pay you $1 million, and we agree that that's going to be the purchase price. See, I'm dating myself when you could buy a piece of real estate for $1 million. That was in the old days, right? Anyway, so now we have something called a shava pruta. The Torah only recognizes kesef as a minimum of a pruta. A pruta is something that will be relative to the currency of any particular society at any particular time. And, you know, the great scholars of each generation will have to make a determination what is a pruta in our time. So I'm not sure exactly, you know, in our time how much a pruta is worth. Somebody told me it's a good couple of shekels. I don't know. Not sure. Be that as it may, if the guy signed an agreement of schirus, of renting out his rights to the chotzer, and the money that was used to clinch this deal was less than a pruta, the Gemara thinks that that's called schirus re'ua. And again, as we said before, it's only like a fig leaf because it's not legally binding. The Torah doesn't recognize the value of kesef that's less than a shava pruta. And schirus bria, which is Rav Chizda's approach, means that the absolute requirement is a minimum of a pruta, a full pruta. So the Gemara rejects this outright, because although it's true that the minimum shear of kesef is shava pruta, but that's only between one Jew and another. If Reuven is contracting with Shimon. But in the world of non-Jews, again, according to our halacha, a pachos mishava pruta, an amount that's less than a pruta's worth, is equivalent to a pruta's worth. And therefore, it makes no sense to assume that the... No sense with an S, I mean. It makes no sense to assume that the machlokas here between revolves around a case of pox mishav pruta, because in a contractual agreement with a non-Jew, the agreement is valid and binding even if it was pachos mishav pruta. Now again, you might ask me, well, all this might be relevant if the case comes up in a Jewish court. Probably in a non-Jewish court, all these distinctions are irrelevant. But let's, for argument's sake, imagine that the guy, if he wants to get his rights to the chatzer, he will sue the Jew in a Jewish court of law. Well, let's just lamazogin, you know, we'll just say so. So Gemara says, "Mi ikolamanti omer me oved kol chavim v'pachos v'shav pruta lo." Is there anyone who could argue that if you're contracting with a non-Jew and the transmission of money was, well, let's say it this way, the transaction was clinched by a pox mishava pruta, then it's not valid, it's not binding, just like it would not be binding in a transaction between a Jew and a Jew. No one would maintain that position. And let me give a little bit of introduction, if you will, to the next piece of Gemara. You know, one of the Taryag Mitzvos, the 613 that we have, is Lo Sigzol, thou shalt not steal. And that violation will only apply in a case of a Shava Pruta. And the Torah says that if you steal something, the Veheshev Sagzelash or Gozal, you must return the stolen goods. And the proviso is that you have to return stolen goods to the minimum value of a pruta. So, for example, if Reuven would steal half of a pruta from Shimon, then that's not considered a full-fledged violation of Lo Sigzol. Hence, Reuven would not have to return a half a pruta to Shimon. How that works is a very profound sugya unto itself. However, Lo Sigzol, thou shalt not steal, in addition to being one of the 613, is also one of the 7 mitzvos b'nei Noach. And in the Noahide codes, according to Jewish law, a guy is responsible and liable for the violation of Lo Sigzol, even if he steals pachos mishava pruta. And that's based on a universal principle which is called Shiurim Li Yisrael Nitnu, that all the minimum Shiurim that we have only apply to Jews, not to non-Jews. So this minimum requirement of a pruta for Lo Sigzol is limited to the Jewish world. It doesn't apply in the non-Jewish world. Now, just to impress you with how far-reaching what I just said, I rattled it off, you know, as if it was from the backhand, but just to begin to appreciate, again, only in a halachic universe, the long-range implications of what I just said. The law is that a guy who violates any of the 7 mitzvahs b'nei Noach is chayav misa. All 7 are capital crimes. One of the 7 is a little tricky. That's called dinim, which means that the guy has to set up courts of law. It's hard to say that John Paul Jones, as one individual, could violate the 7th of the 7 Noahide laws of dinim and b'chayv misa because he didn't set up a court of law. So that's complicated. And if you're ever interested in researching that, you could start with the Ramban in the Parsha of Shechem, where the Ramban claims that according to Shimon and Levi, they had a right and maybe even an obligation to wipe out the city of Shechem because of Dinan. Dinan means that they didn't judge Shechem for his rape against Dinah. And for the non-compliance and fulfillment of dinim, of courts of law, they were condemned to death according to Jewish law. I mean, again, that's a very controversial position of the Ramban. But let's take the other 6, which are immorality, murder, theft. Here, we have a principle, again, I'm not getting into this now, that's way far afield for us, called Azarosam Zui Misosam, that whenever the Torah prohibits something to a Ben Noach, it automatically becomes a capital crime. So imagine the following scenario. John Paul Jones steals from his friend Christopher a half a pruta. John Paul Jones, if condemned in a court of law, will suffer the death penalty for stealing half of a pruta. Pretty mind-boggling. And the Gemara now quotes a statement of Rabbi Yitzchak. V'hasholach Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Yaakov bar Giore mishmei d'Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yitzchak has a transmission in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Hevi yodim, you should know, shesochrim min ha'ovei kochavim afilu b'pachos mishove pruta. That we can establish a full-fledged and absolutely binding rental agreement with a guy over a transaction of a pachos mishove pruta. Let's again assume that the pachos mishove pruta was a down payment. You know, the rental agreement required $1,000 a month of rental fees, but the actual giving of the money was pachos mishava pruta. Now, imagine if I were to tell you that a shekel is a pruta. So a chatzi shekel, right, I this morning I had 2 chatzi shekels. I gave it into the pushka. So a chatzi shekel, which weighs more than a shekel by far. Anyway, that's called a chatzi pruta. And if I gave the guy a half a shekel for this rental agreement, Rabbi Yitzchak, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, tells us that the schirus is valid and binding. And Omar Rabbi Chiyo bar Abba Rabbi Yochanan ben Noach nerag al pochos mishove pruta. This is further support to the statement of Rabbi Yitzchak in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Now it's Rabbi Chiyo in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, but they're all saying the same thing. That as far as the law of a guy, as it pertains to a non-Jew, is concerned, even less than a Shava Pruta is considered like a Pruta, and there's no difference between the two. And therefore, number one, this is Rabbi Yitzchak, the Schirus, the rental agreement, is binding even though the transaction was a Pachos Mishava Pruta. And number two, the statement of Rabbi Abba in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that if a Ben Noach is guilty of theft of a Pachos Mishava Pruta, he will be condemned to death for that violation. And Velo Nitan Lihishavon. Okay, now I'm not sure exactly what that means. Velo Nitan Lihishavon. And it say he says the following: V'lo nitan iser gezel ze litikun bashova lebailim shebi Yisrael nemar ve'eshiv esagzela ve'alkein bashova esagzela hu misaken es alav shelo sigzol v'yeno loke ulon ben Noach lo nemra bo mitzvah zushal ashova v'yein lo takono li iser sha'ovar v'lochein nerag olav. Now again, these are complicated sugyas in Masechta Makis. So what I'm about to share with you is just milamala, you know, just this, you know, skimming the surface. And not everything I'm going to tell you is accurate according to all opinions, but according to one opinion in the Gemara, do you get Malkus, 39 lashes, if you steal something? A Jew, Reuven, steals from Shimon, if he is condemned to court, in court, does he get Malkus? And the answer is, depends whether he returns the Gzela. We'll give him the option. He's got two options. If he refuses to return the Gzela, we're going to give him 39 Malkus. Again, it's only one Shita in the Gemara Malkus. If, on the other hand, he refuses to return the Gzela, we'll give him, right? If, on the other hand, he opts to return the Gzela, and he fulfills the mitzvah of Ve'eshev's Gzela Sher Gozal, that's called a Tikkun on the lav. He rectifies the lav, and he no longer needs Malkus. He will no longer get Malkus. So the Gemara says that that only applies to Yisrael. He has the possibility of rectifying and undermining his lav, completely neutralizing his lav, by fulfilling the mitzvah of Ve'eshev Sagzela. But in the case of Ben Noach, he doesn't have a mitzvah of Ve'eshev Sagzela, and therefore he doesn't have a tikkun, and he will be chayav misa, because that's the punishment that applies to Ben Noach when he violates any of his seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. So in this case, he stole pachos mishava pruta, and he will be put to death. We see clearly from Rabbi Chiya, the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that Ben Noach is killed for pachos mishava pruta. Pachos mishava pruta is considered mamon, it's considered money, recognized halachically as money, as far as the guy is concerned at least. And therefore, a schiris agreement, even if the total sum of money that was transferred from one to the other was only a pachos mishava pruta, that's considered an absolutely binding schiris agreement. So therefore, the Gemara says it's impossible to assume that the machlokas between Rav Chisda and Rav Sheshes would revolve about in Schirus Bria or Schirus Ru'ua, would revolve around the case of Pachos Mishava Pruta. Because everybody would agree that as far as the Ben Noach agreement, or rental in this case, is concerned, there's no difference between Pachos Mishava Pruta and Shava Pruta. Ella, but rather, says the Gemara, what's the difference between Bria and Ru'ua? Bria, Bimarke, via burgene. These are various kinds of chairs that we sit on. And schiris bria means that the rental agreement that was signed by the guy gives permission to the Jew to fill up the chatzer with, he calls it safsalim, which are benches, ketedraot, which are couches, different kinds of chairs. In other words, it is a serious, full-fledged rental agreement. And the Jew can take the advantage of this and use the chatzer in any way he wants. You know, they used to use the chatzer to eat outdoors. So he sets up all his different kinds of chairs outdoors and he fills up the chatzer. And this is a serious schirus. What's ra'ua? Below Marke v'Abu Garne, and this is a very limited, conditional rental agreement in which the guy will not allow the Jew to take all his chairs out of his house and fill up the chatzer. And there's an entire discussion here between Rashi and Tosfos Dira Maschil Marke, which is a small Tosfos on the bottom, but always be careful with the small Tosfos in, about whether or not this case of Re'ua requires a shtar. And Tosfos writes that the schirus is accomplished with a shtar, with a document. Now, in our generation, in the previous century, we had the Chazon Ish, and he explains Tosfos, Af she schirus regila efshel liskor minochri gam bekinyan kesef below shtar, kan etzrichu shtar, kedei shetei Yad Yisrael tkeifal et nochri shelo yigzol es hachotzer. Okay, so that's the point of the Chazon Ish, that the Jew wants to have this agreement a testimony to that agreement has to be written up in a document, because the Jew is going to want to use this document if need be in a court of law. But then he writes that schiris zu eino schiris shel mamish kidin schiris u mishpatea ela hi ke'ein schiris bilvad. Okay, the key word is ke'ein. And again, I translate the word ke'ein here as a fig leaf, as an imitation. You know, it looks like a schiris agreement, but in reality, you know, the socher, the Jew, is not really taking over the chatzer. It's a very limited kind of schiris. And the Rambam adds the following. Eino elo leheker bilvat. Oh, I'm excited about this, because remember I wanted at the beginning of our discussion to introduce the term heker. Heker means some sort of like reminiscence, you know, of some sort of memory device. You know, it reminds you of schiris. You know, we're gonna create some sort of a document that looks like a schiris document. Okay, so just to summarize, what the Gemara is saying now is that according to Rav Chisda, if you want to be matir, you want to permit the Jew to take objects, vessels, whatever it might be, from his house into the chatzer on Shabbos, then what you're going to require is a full-fledged schiris, which means a binding contractual agreement. And that means that the Jew now has full rights to use the chatzer in any way, any shape or form that he pleases. And he can bring in all his couches and his benches and his trampolines, and that's what the schiris is all about. Rav Sheshes, on the other hand, says that this schiris really has no teeth to it. In other words, there's no acquisition of rights, and yet it's a heker, to use the Rambam's language, and that's sufficient to allow the Jew to carry from his house on Shabbos into the chotzer. So now let's go back to the original question. We said that the entire takana of excluding what's called bitul rishus in the case of a goy and requiring an upgrade to schiris is so that we inhibit the Jew from purchasing a house in this chotzer that he's going to share with a goy, because it's going to be very difficult for the Jew to extract a contract from the goy if the requirement is schiris. So the Gemara says, "Hani chalamandi omer." This makes sense according to Rav Chisda, sheschiris bria beinon, that we need a full-fledged binding schirus that covers the entire gamut of use of the chotzer, and therefore the guy is not going to agree to sign such a contract because it puts him into a very vulnerable situation in which the Jew could claim that he has purchased rights to the chotzer. And when the guy says that's a lot of malarkey, well, the Jew is going to bring witnesses in a court that he's been using this chotzer for the last 50 years, and he has a chazakah. Forget about 50 years, 3 years. El amandi, but if you hold like Rav Sheshes, sheschirus ru'ua be'inon, that all we're asking is the guy to sign a contract which is basically a heker. And it's not a schirus shel mamish, it's ke'ein schirus. And at the end of the day, the Jew is not going to be allowed to use this chotzer in the way he pleases. Is Michael and Meimer, how are you going to accomplish your goal of inhibiting the guy from agreeing to the schirus and thereby inhibiting the Jew from entering into a chotzer where he won't be able to carry on Shabbos from his bais into a chotzer? And the Gemara answers, afilu hachi, even though this is not really schirus, and according to Rav Sheshes, it doesn't supply the Jew with rights to use the chutz and fill up the chutz with all his utensils and his furniture. Nevertheless, chayeshovi kachom l'kshofim v'lo melger. So at this point in the sugya, the Gemara introduces another element into the equation. And this is going to be the final answer to the Gemara as to why the guy is inhibited and he will think a million times before he agrees to rent out his chotzer to a Jew. And that's called kshafim. Now, what we're doing is we're taking a time machine back to a whole nother sociological period of history. And again, a lot of this is very, shall I say, alien or foreign to our understanding. But the guy is afraid of kshafim, of some sort of sorcery, and the Gemara doesn't exactly tell us what the nature of this sorcery is, but I can just tell you this, that somehow the guy thinks that if he allows the Jew to use the chotzer, that's going to create some sort of a sorcery. I just want to read this to you. He says, the following, that the idolater will be suspicious that the Jew is engaged in acts of sorcery. And this suspicion is reinforced by the fact that the Jew is not willing to accept rights in this chotzer as a gift. He'll only carry it into the chotzer if the idolater accepts a payment for rental. So what I understand here is that the goy has a psarkasha, something that's very strange. the guy was willing to be mevatel his rishus and give the Jew rights to carry from his house into the chutz. And in the guy's mind, that should certainly suffice. Now the Jewish neighbor quotes, invoking Jewish law, says, "No, no, no, I'm sorry, my friend John Paul, I need you to sign a contract." When John Paul hears that, and it doesn't make any bit of sense, which it really doesn't, and that's why the Chacham required this signature, he starts thinking that the Jew really wants to somehow give a whammy to this chotzer, you know, do something very Jewish to this chotzer, in which case that the guy will suffer from some sort of evil eye when he, the guy, uses the chotzer. So the Jew will, you know, will be able to somehow inject an evil eye into the chotzer. Okay, now the Gemara says v'lo mogar. As a result of this fear, the guy is inhibited, and he doesn't want to rent out his chotzer. And at the end of the day, if that be the case, the Jew will not be allowed to carry from his house into the chotzer, and this is not a good place to live. And I gave you yesterday the mashal of young couples who will only buy an apartment or rent an apartment, live in a neighborhood where there's an eruv that they can, you know, roll the carriage in the streets. Now, the Art Scroll here has a little bit of an overview, a paragraph or two of a summary of the sugya. So I'll just share that with you. He says that in a case of an akum who's living in this chotzer, the halacha doesn't recognize his resonance as a resonance which would prohibit the Jew from taking out from his house into the chotzer, and that's considered, in the Gemara's language, diras akum lav shmei dira. And the Gemara insists that everybody agrees that diras akum lav shmei dira. However, although the house of this akum opens into a chotzer, and technically that would not generate any sort of an iser on the Yisrael, because, as we said before, the dira of the akum is similar to dira of a behemoth. It doesn't have any impact on the laws of Erev Chatzeros. However, the Rabbanon looked for a way of separating the Jews from the Goyim and deterring and making it uncomfortable for a Jew to buy a house and share the chotzer with a guy who lives next door. So they made an enactment that the Jew is not allowed to carry from his house into the chotzer on Shabbos unless he procures from the guy a written document that clinches a rental agreement, a schirus agreement. The idolater, on the other hand, is inhibited. He doesn't want to sign such an agreement. He doesn't know, according to Rav Chisda, he's afraid because that's going to be a full-fledged binding rental agreement, and who knows if the Yisrael is going to create a chazaka on the chotzer, claiming that it's his chotzer. According to Rav Sheshes, the guy is inhibited because of other kinds of psychological fears that have to do with sorcery. Now, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says that it's very unusual for one Jew to purchase a home and share the chutzah, the common courtyard, with one guy. And that's because, you know, if they share a chutzah, you never know what the guy is going to do. But if two Jews will buy, respectively, two houses, and the third homeowner in that chutz is going to be a guy, that's common. And since this whole institution that we're learning about is all a gzera of chachamim, which is meant to deter a Jew from buying a house next door to a guy, then we have a principle of milsilo shchicholo gozru beirabonon. So Rabbi Eliezer activates that principle, and since one Jew, one lone Jew in a chotzer with a guy is so uncommon, they never enacted this gzera with regard to one Jew. Rabbi Meir disagrees, and he holds that such things do happen from time to time, and there's a for sale sign. You know, John Paul Jones has a second house in his chatzer, and he puts up a for sale sign. The agent calls up the Jew, and he says, "Wow, this is a good bargain. It's a beautiful house. It's got a view. It's got a porch, etc., etc." And the Jew agrees to buy it. And therefore, the enactment of requiring schirus of the guy in order to be matir tiltul from the bais into the chatzer is in place, because hayu dvar me'olam, these things do happen, perhaps less frequently, but frequently enough so that the rabbanan's gzera would apply. And that leads us to gufa. And we're going to now go back to the braisa that we quoted earlier about a chatzer which has a guy living in that chatzer. Gufa. Chatzero shalove kochamareu kidir shal behema. We said that according to the strict law, before the Rabbanim made all their different enactments, the ownership of the guy in the chatzer is lav shmei dira. It's similar to dir shel behema, a stable, he calls it, of animals. And the animal obviously doesn't own any legal rights in the stable. And therefore, if this stable is located in a chatzer, the Jew does not have to worry about carrying from his bias into the chatzer. The same thing applies if this chatzer is legally owned by an aku. Umutu lahachnis ulahotzi. And again, according to the strict letter of the law, a Jew would be allowed to take a utensil from his house out into the chatzer, which is owned in partnership by a goy, minat chatzer lebatim, umin abatim lechatz, from the house to the chatzer, and vice versa. V'im yesham Yisrael echad, oser. Okay. So let's, in order to understand this next line in the Gemara, we're gonna say the following. That I'm going to read this to you. He says, "Ein hachotzer nechsheves keilu yesh ba kama reshuyos v'aser lahotzi ulahachnis me'abatim lechotzer chotzer lebatim af chotzer shedorim ba kama nochrim." Eino nachsheves ki ilu yesh ba kama reshuyo, so mutu lahachtes holtzi min hachotze lebatim min habatim lechotze. Which means that if John Paul Jones owns the house that leads into a chatzer, then Yankel Beryl, a Jew, is allowed to carry from John Paul Jones's house into John Paul Jones's chatzer. And let's assume that there are 10 goyim that share one chatzer. A yid is allowed to carry from any of the houses that share that chatzer into the chatzer, vice versa. Why? Because there's not one single Jew who lives in that chatzah, who shares that chatzah. However, Rabbi Meir holds that im yesham Yisrael echad, if there's one homeowner that shares that chatzah, oser, he, by virtue of his ownership, will generate an Iser to carry from the batim into the chatzer, or vice versa. Because now this chatzer belongs to the Jew, no less than it belongs to the other goyim who are sharing this common courtyard. And our halacha is that you, when you have an area that is miucheresli echad, and at the same time is miucheres liacher, meaning you have two separate ownerships that generate two respectively separate rights to use that chatzer, then you need an eruv. And in the absence thereof, you're not allowed to carry from the house into the chatzer. So here you have one rishus is that of the Israel, and you have another rishus that of the goy, or the many goyim that own partnership in that chatzer, and you're going to need an eruv. And you can't make an eruv with a goy. And your only option would have been bittul rishus, but that doesn't work because of the chachamim's takana requiring schirus, and that's not going to help you much because the goyim are not going to be interested in schirus. So all this is divrei Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Lezer, and Yaakov Omer liolameina oser ad shiyu shnei Yisraelim. In other words, you have to have two Jewish homeowners, both of whom have rights to that common chotzer, vehem osrim zelzeh. And they will generate an iser of tiltul from the batim into the chatzer. As we described earlier, because Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov requires milsa shchicha, something that's more common. It's uncommon for one Jewish homeowner to move into a non-Jewish neighborhood of a chatzer. But two Jews, you know, they do it as like a buddy system, a team system, and they feel secure when they purchase houses in this chatzah that they're sharing with a guy. Once that becomes commonplace, then the Rabbanan Institute, their requirement of Osrim Zel Zeh, which means you're going to have to get some sort of schiris agreement with a guy, and good luck. See if you can do that. And now we're turning to Daf Samach Beis Amid Beis. Omar Mar, we learned in the Brisa, Chatzero shall oved kochavim, if you have a chatzer that many different batim open into a common courtyard, and there are a number of goyim who live in those houses, hareyu kedir shel behema, which means that if there are no Jews that share that chatzer, then you're allowed to carry from the batim into the chatzer, unless there's one Jew who generates an iser, according to Rabbi Meir at least, of hotzah min habayis al chatzer, requiring an eruv. So again, a guy doesn't generate an iser, and you can carry from his house into the chatzer. Again, we're all assuming that there are mechitzos and so forth and so on. And that's because the house of a goy is like the stable, we said, of a deer shalbeim. Once we have one Yisrael, he generates an Yisr Otzah from the bayis to the chatzer. So imagine if you were in the goy's house. Let's say you were visiting him on Shabbos, and you wanted to carry out from the goy's house into the chatzer, you would not be allowed to do so. Why? Because you live in that same chatzer. And we said that the ownership rights of a Yisrael in his bias generates an iser of hotzov achnasa, meaning to take something out of a bias into the chatzer, vice versa. And that applies even to the beso shel nachri. Okay. Now, when the Brisa says that if there wasn't a Jew, you'd be allowed to carry something from the house of the goy into the chatzer, but when there is a Jew, then you're not allowed to carry. Again, one Jew is enough according to Rabbi Meir. You need two Jews according to Rabbi Lezer. It would sound like, by implication, this brisa is telling you that the Jew would be allowed to carry from his house out to the chotzer. Again, he owns this house, right? Out to the chotzer. Because, as we said before, the brisa claims that the ownership of the nachri in the chotzer is not significant as far as Erevin is concerned, and it's like the ownership of a behemoth. I mean, if a behemoth eats, you know, sets up a stable for behemoth in the chotzer, that doesn't generate any yisur. In other words, what changed here in the brisa when the Jew owns a bias in the chotzer is that now that which was mutter before the Jew purchased his house, namely to take from the guy's house out to the chotzer, vice versa, that became also. But as far as the Jew carrying from his house out to the chotzer, that apparently is mutter, even if the Jew owns his house and shares the chotzer with the guy, because the ownership of the guy is not valid enough to generate an iser. To be motzi from the bais into the chotzer. The word says, "Varnan tanan." What are we going to do with our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says, "Hadar im ha'ove kochavim bechotzer, hareza oser olav." And the language of hareza oser olav means that the dira, the residence of the guy in this chotzer, generates an iser on the Yisrael that prohibits the Jew from carrying from his house, meaning the Jew's house, out into the chotzer. That's against the brisa. Lokasha had the isa had the lesa. Now, at this point, the Gemara introduces a whole breakthrough in halacha. We've been talking about ownership, and our premise was, up until this lokasha, that ownership alone will determine whether it's an Iser Otsom and Abayis al Achotzer. Now the Gemara is saying no. The fact that the guy owns the Chotzer, meaning rights to the Chotzer, and he shares those rights with the Jew who purchased in the Chotzer, that per se may or may not generate an Iser. And what condition has to be met in order for that the ownership of the guy to generate an Iser? We need the Isa, that the guy is there. What do I mean the guy is there? Loma Zogin, I'll just create out of my brain a scenario. Every other Shabbos, the guy goes out to on a fishing tour, you know, a long weekend to Swan Lake. So for that Shabbos, the guy is not residing in his house. Again, legally he owns the house. He just took a weekend off. So for that Shabbos, the Jew is allowed to carry into the chutz. The next Shabbos, the guy is local, he's at home, and the Jew is not allowed to carry into the chutz. So when the Brisa says that if the guy and the Jew both own property in the area that feeds into the chutz, then the guy will not generate an iser, and the Jew is allowed to carry. That's because the guy is away. He's away for Shabbos. It's funny to talk about that. A guy is away for Shabbos. But our Mishnah that says that once the guy is there, then the Jew cannot carry from his bias to the chutzer. That's going to be a case of the lesser. Lesser means that the Nochri is not home for Shabbos, and if he went away for Shabbos, that he doesn't generate an Iser. And this despite the fact that the guy owns the bias, that's not enough. And the Gemara, which we'll believe Neder will cover tomorrow, is going to try to clarify this halacha and why it depends upon whether the guy is home for Shabbos or he's not. Where he's not home for Shabbos, he's vacated his house for Shabbos. Okay then, so this is where we're going to stop for today.